fighting for your financial freedom. This is the Mad Money Machine. Hello, everybody. This is Paul Douglas Boyer. I want to thank you for downloading this show, The Mad Money Machine, to your iPod, to your Zoom, to your computer. It is the beginning of May, and it's a beautiful day outside. We've had a whole lot of rain in the past few days. Some streets were closed due to flooding. Ah, but the sun's back out, things are drying out, and I think I'll get a chance to mow the lawn after I'm done recording this show. Coming up on this episode, number 111, the triple witching episode, I'm going to talk a little bit about the lost time loop theory. I'll talk about Chris Anderson's appearance on Econ Talk. I finished reading Biography of the Dollar. I'll answer Keith, Brian, and Roshana's emails. And I'll talk about the giant pool of money. And May is Manager Picker Month. Which manager would you pick for your investments? Well, I hope that you will not pick a manager to handle your investments. I hope instead that either you will handle them yourself or you will find a fiduciary financial advisor to guide you into the most sensible and risk-appropriate investments in a basket of index funds. And there's no better place to do that, my friends, than I believe that Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. They're the sponsor of the show, you know. If you go out to their website, I think you can find still links to the content of Mark Hebner's book, Index Funds, the 12-Step Program for Active Investors. There are 12 main chapters for each of the 12 steps for you active investors to help you overcome your addiction. Just to recap, if you're just joining the show, step one talks about the problem of active investing. Step two gives us background from the Nobel laureates discussing scientific evidence why passive investing beats active investing. Step three is an overview of stock picking. Step four is an overview of time picking, trying to time the market. And in May, we're up to step five, and that is manager pickers. That's folks that are trying to pick an actively managed mutual fund that will beat the market. And I can tell you that it's absolutely ridiculous. The chances of you picking a manager that beats the market is about 1 in 37, about the same as picking one number on the roulette wheel. Would you put the chances of you beating the market with your retirement money all on one number on the roulette wheel? Why not just accept market returns? As Dan Solon said in his book, The Smartest Investment Book You'll Ever Read, he said, market returns are superior returns. If you can get the returns of the market, you're beating so many other people. And look at all the effort that you have to put into getting market returns, which is about zero. I would say be joyous when your returns match market returns. Why waste your time picking managers? Warren Buffett held his Woodstock of Capitalism, his annual shareholders meeting in Omaha, Nebraska. 30-some thousand people attended, standing room only event in this great convention, concert hall, sports arena. They asked him, what's in store for the economy? Buffett said he doesn't have a clue and he doesn't care. I haven't the faintest idea, he said. We never talk about it. It never comes up in our board meetings or other discussions. We're not in that business of economic forecasting. We don't know how to be in that business. If we knew where the economy was going, we'd do nothing but play the S&P futures market. Right. Now, his simple point is, as an investor, you don't need to predict the economic cycle or even pay much attention to it. Instead, you should focus on evaluating individual businesses if you pick your own stocks, or better, just simply buy the entire market in the form of index funds. When a shareholder asked for the single best specific investment idea Buffett could recommend to an individual in his 30s, Buffett said, I would just have it all in a very low-cost set of index funds from a reputable firm, maybe Vanguard. Unless I bought during a strong bull market, I would feel confident that I would outperform, and I could just go back and get on with my work. Got an email from Rosh and says, "Hi, Paul. I enjoy your podcast. You're a true talent who can sing financial tunes in a beautiful melody, and I enjoy your passive mantra of indexing. Not to take too much of your time, but I went to IFA.com. You can only open an account starting with a minimum of $100,000. How can people like us who do not have $100,000 invest in index funds? Can you guide us towards your passive mantra of investing in index funds? Again, I enjoy the show and learning every day from you." Thanks, Roshan. There are several ways to invest in index funds. Go to Vanguard and open an account and send them a check. That's the simple way to do it. Which fund should you buy at Vanguard? Of course, I don't know your situation. I would say the first thing you can still do at IFA.com is take their risk capacity survey and get an idea of what mix of stocks versus bonds you should be invested in. What is your capacity for risk? How much standard deviation can you accept in the swings of the market? After you take the risk capacity survey, then you'll end up with a number, kind of like the sleep number mattress. This is the index number investing. Somewhere between 5 and 100, 20 different portfolios. Just take a look at the makeup of the number that you get. How much does it recommend you invest in large cap funds? How much in small cap, micro cap, emerging markets, international, and then how much in bonds? And just write those percentages down. With your account at Vanguard, then go buy the matching index funds that they offer. And there's a number of places out on my website where I show some of the matching type of funds. Go to the madmoneymachine.com/portfolios tab, for example, and you can see a lot of different lazy portfolios as examples out there. Look at the MMM Smiler portfolio as an example of some of the matching funds that Vanguard offers. And if your minimum, if your amount to invest is still too low to buy all of the index funds, start with something maybe like the total stock market and the total international stock market funds. And then as you add more money, start buying into some of those small cap funds and maybe the emerging market funds and the REIT funds. If you're just starting out on investing, you're in good shape. You've got a long time horizon, hopefully according to your risk capacity, and you're going to do just fine. Thanks, Roshan. I finished reading that second book I got from Amazon because my HD DVD drive doesn't play anything anymore. Bought three books. The second one is The Biography of the Dollar by Craig Carman. And so he takes the simple subject, the single subject of the dollar, and looks at it from various viewpoints. He actually goes in to talk about the Bureau of Engraving and Printing and how they print the dollar, and talks about the dollar's rise to being the world's reserve currency, and then asks the question, will it all come to an end? Doesn't seem like it would it? I'd say get this book out of the library if you have a chance. Listen to an econ talk with Chris Anderson of Wired Magazine. He wrote the book The Long Tail. Well, he is writing another book, which he says he's going to call Free. And he doesn't have the subtitle for it yet. About an hour-long discussion with Russ Roberts at Econ Talk, all about the digital age. He says if something can go digital, it will go digital. And if something is digital, it will eventually be free. And he does give some pretty compelling examples. For example, he talks about online legal documents, for example. You know, if you wanted to get a will prepared, it's like $1,500, $2,000 if you go see a human. Doing it online, $20 or something. Compares the battle of Gmail versus Yahoo Mail and how Google came in with a very large capacity and Yahoo answered with infinite capacity at the same price, free. Talks about the difference between asking someone to buy something for one penny versus just giving it to them for free and how big that difference really is. There's one thing they don't talk about, which I think would be interesting to talk about. I know this has come up before, but you know how 9-inch Nails and some other artists are giving away their albums for free. But it's not quite free, though, is it? It's free in monetary terms, but it's not free in total cost because they ask you for information. They ask you for your email address. Well, I'll have a link in the show notes or in the website to the Econ Talk podcast. I recommend if you've got an hour, take a listen to that. I've been watching the TV show Lost this season. Have you been watching this? Last season, I didn't like it at all. This season, it's pretty good, but I gotta say, I have no idea what is going on. I did come across an entry on the web, though, once called the Time Loop Theory. And this might help explain some of what in the world is going on with these flashbacks and flash forwards, and you got guys traveling through time and all of this stuff. Well, the Time Loop Theory says that the Dharma Initiative invented a time machine, and Ben discovered it and was able to go back in time and come back to the island, and maybe the island's in the future. We don't know, but it's going to be interesting to see if they can explain this all away by the time the show ends, right?
Try to understand. He's a magic man, mama.
I'm going to give you an update now on some of the magic formula investing performance. Last October, I went out to the magicformulainvesting.com website and I got the list of the recommended stocks. You see, there was a book that came out a couple of years ago by Joel Greenblatt. The little book that beats the market was his claim. And he had this system for picking stocks that were undervalued that he claims would beat the market. So October 10th, I got the list. Put them in a spreadsheet. I've updated the prices, and as of May the 12th, the average of all of the stocks in the MagicFormulaInvesting.com list that I got is down 16.8%. Compare that to the total stock market index, which is down 9% since that time. Compare that to a REIT index, which is down 9.2% since that time. So it beat the market all right, but in the negative direction. I encourage you to go out to the madmoneymachine.com website and take a look at the new look. The previous look had three columns, a sidebar, left sidebar, a middle content area, and then a right sidebar. And the problem was, if your screen was too small, that middle content area got squished and put to the bottom. So I have picked a new WordPress theme, and I've put the content on the left and then two sidebars on the right. And I'm hoping that when it gets squished, it stays there or just eliminates one of those right sidebars and you can still see the content right at the top of the screen right where it's supposed to be. Let me know if it works for you. Go out to the madmoneymachine.com website, see if you can see it, and click on a Google ad while you're out there. So my last issue of the Wall Street Journal came last Saturday. I read it, put it in the recycling bin. Monday came. No Wall Street Journal on the driveway. I'm doing okay. Tuesday came. Wednesday, no Wall Street Journal. So far, I think I'm going to make it. Got an email from Keith. Hey, Paul, love the show. My trading style has completely changed due largely to the Mad Money Machine podcast. I've really learned a lot. Thanks for all you do. Quick question. When it comes to index funds, mutual funds, and ETFs, is it possible for any of these funds or fund companies to go out of business and take my money with them? Well, you know, Keith, if a company like Vanguard were to suddenly go out of business, your money is probably not going to be the biggest worry that you have, because at that point, I think all of capitalism is going to be collapsing. I've never known of anyone losing all of their money because a mutual fund company has gone out of business. And I hope to get emails from people correcting me and giving me examples, and if so, I'll pass them along to you. As far as exchange-traded funds, well, those are traded like a stock. I think there is risk in a ETN, exchange-traded note, because those are backed by the company that issues them, whereas an exchange-traded fund actually owns shares of the stock. And theoretically, if your broker goes out of business and you own shares of stock, well, you still own those shares of stock, and you can trade them through a different broker. I know it's a pain to try to get those traded around and so forth. But I would say read the prospectus, whatever it is you're buying, understand the risks that you're taking, and diversify. Thanks for the email, Keith. Got an email from Brian. Paul, I just got this in my email from my 401k provider about a new fund that's been added to my 401k as an option. The Fidelity Low Priced Stock Fund, which is FLPSX. I thought after reading the name that I was getting a new index fund with a low expense ratio. Yeah, right. Imagine my surprise when I read the fund's strategy, which is this. Normally invest primarily in common stocks, normally investing at least 80% of assets in low-priced stocks, those priced at or below $35 per share, which can lead to investments in small and medium-sized companies. If they want to invest in small and medium-sized companies, why don't they use market cap as a criteria? I guess this fund has been around for a while, but I thought you'd appreciate the, quote, wisdom of their, quote, strategy. Oh my goodness, Brian. Yeah, you know what, Brian? I remember this fund from a long time ago, and boy, what an incredibly dumb idea is to buy stocks based on their price. Oh my goodness. I know people that buy stocks based upon their price. They look at the price of the stock and they say, oh, it's too cheap. You know, it's only $3. Or they say, or more likely, they say, oh, that's too expensive. You know, $75 for a share of that stock? I don't like stocks like that. I like stocks more in the $20 range. Well, you know why that fund exists? And you know why it does well? Because there are people that think it's a good idea. I just wonder, in fact, Brian, your email doesn't say what the expense ratio on it actually is. So I'm going to go out to Morningstar and look it up. I'll type in FLPSX, and it says it's closed. So, wow, what a treat that it's getting added to your 401k, right? Expense ratio 0.96%. Now, that is on the high side. I mean, compare that to Vanguard Small Cap Value Index, VISVX, which charges an expense ratio of 0.22%. What is that, a fifth of the Fidelity Low Price Stock Fund? Well, thanks for the email and good luck with your 401k plan. Just now became aware of something called Revolution Money Exchange, and that's the website address, revolutionmoneyexchange.com. What it looks like to be is sort of a PayPal that's free. You know how when you sell something on eBay, let's say you sell it for $100, the person sends you the $100 through PayPal. Well, you got to pay PayPal 4% of that, $4 of that. So you only get $96 for the thing that you sold $100. Well, Revolution Money Exchange claims to be completely free. They pay you the $100. You get $100. Oh, the difference looks to me to be that you have to put money into the Revolution Money Exchange. So you have to transfer money in there. And then I guess you'd have to transfer it out when you get paid, right? And so there's a short period of time between when the money goes in and the money goes out that Revolution Money has the money. And that's called the float, and that's where they, I presume, make their money. And I further presume that just like any sort of bank, that once they get enough money floated in their system, that they could then make loans against that money in their system and make money on the loans and so forth and so on. But as long as it's free and as long as it works, it looks like a good idea. If any of you know anything about it, let me know. All right, let's talk about something a little bit more generic than investing in the stock market. This is from Reader's Digest. The secrets of self-made millionaires. They're just like you, but with lots of money. From December 2007, Kristen Kusek Lewis. Well, the first thing you find out, I think, when you talk about millionaires is $1 million doesn't go as far as it used to, that's for sure. If you're looking to retire with any kind of house in suburbia these days, you probably need more than $1 million. So let's talk about, $3 or $4 or $5 million, for example. But how do you get to this state then when you've got this much money to be able to have financial freedom? Number one, according to Reader's Digest, set your sights on where you are going. And isn't that a wonderful lesson? If you're just starting out of college and you need to develop financial freedom for yourself, you need to get a picture in your mind of how much money do I need to have financial freedom, first of all. And I'm telling you that today you need about $3 or $4 million probably. And when by the time a 20-year-old person retires, you'll probably need what? A factor in inflation times that. If you figure 40 more years of inflation at 3% or 4%, then it's probably going to double. What's the rule of 72? 3 into 72. So it only takes a little over 20-some years for things to double, or for you need to double that. So figure about $6 million. So now that you realize that you need $6 million in order to have your financial freedom, what are you going to do to try to get there? Number two, educate yourself. Well, that's certainly part of it, isn't it? I think one of the key things that most people coming out of government schools don't understand is that the power of compound investing, the power of compound interest. You know, if something goes up 10% a year for 8 years, it's not the same as going up 80%, right? Because the first year it goes up 10%, and the second year, the 110% of the stuff that you had now goes up 10%, right? You keep compounding on the compounding. And of course, educating yourself in many other things is what's going to help you get to this eventual goal of financial freedom. Number three, they say, passion pays off. What they're talking about here is when you do something you love, the money will follow. If you get involved in something that you're really passionate about, chances are there's a way to turn that passion into profits. Now, it's not true for everything, I'm sure, but if you're really looking to help people, there's probably a way that that can be profitable. Number four, grow your money. They say most of us know the never-ending cycle of living paycheck to paycheck, but the fastest way to get out of the pattern is to make extra money for the specific purpose of reinvesting in yourself. So either invest the money in some capital asset or invest it in yourself by taking the classes that you need or getting the experience you need to make even more money. Number five, no guts, no glory. And basically what they're talking about here is take a risk and start a business. And what they should have as number six, but is the last item here, the biggest secret, stop spending. Every millionaire we spoke to has one thing in common. Not a single one spends needlessly. One guy drives a Ford Explorer and says his middle-class neighbors would be shocked to know how much he's worth. Another guy can't fathom why anyone would buy bottled water. Another one looked at a $1.5 million home but decided to buy one for half the price because a house with double the cost wouldn't give me double the enjoyment. They say Warren Buffett, the third richest person in the world, lives in the same house he bought four decades ago for $31,500. Reminds me of that book, The Millionaire Next Door. In an effort to be clever, I decided to call this episode the Triple Witching episode, since it's episode MMM111. And do you remember hearing this term triple witching? I know when I watched Wall Street Week with Louis Rukeyser, he would frequently talk about the triple witching Friday that was coming up and how horrible it was going to be for stocks, and you got to watch out for this big event, the triple witching Friday. So I decided to look this up recently and describe it for you. According to Investopedia, triple witching is an event that occurs when the contracts for stock index futures, stock index options, and stock options all expire on the same day. Triple witching days happen four times a year on the third Friday of March, June, September, and December. This phenomenon is sometimes referred to as Freaky Friday. The final trading hour for that Friday is the hour known as triple witching. The markets are quite volatile in this final hour as traders quickly offset their options or futures orders before the closing bell. If you're a long-term investor, triple witching will have a minimal impact on you. Well, I know for a period of time there, Wall Street Week with Louis Rukeyser was just about my only window into investing. And I guess just like thousands of people today have Jim Cramer to thank for getting them interested in investing, I have Louis Rukeyser to thank for getting me interested in investing. But I wish there was a show out there that talked about the benefits of passive investing instead of actively trading stocks. I wish there were a show out there that just told me, buy the indexes and set it and forget it, and you'll be better off. Then I would have had my Fridays freed up. You may have heard the term credit crunch. If you listen to any of the news media these days, they're talking about the U.S. is in a credit crunch. Do you know what it really means? Do you know what the mortgage mess is really all about? I encourage you to listen to a This American Life episode, which I'll have a link to in Alpha Blog Posting at MadMoneyMachine.com. It's about an hour-long episode where they go in and talk to some of the actual guys involved in the chain of the credit crunch. It's a fascinating episode. It's very good, easy to understand. It's not technical jargon. It explains very clearly how we got into the mess we're in and where we are now and what's going to happen. And if you've got an hour, download it to your iPod by subscribing to their link, or just download it and listen to it through your computer. They talk about the giant pool of money and how the about 6 or so years ago, they added up the total amount of money in the world. It came to about $36 trillion. 6 years later, it almost doubled to $70 trillion of money in the world. And the owners of all that money wanted to put it to use, wanted to find risks to take with the money. And that drove some of these mortgage-backed securities. I won't get into all the details right now, but needless to say, today, the giant pool of money is not looking for risk. Well, I want to thank you for joining me. I hope I can help you in your endeavors to become a passive investor to make your financial freedom a successful one. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes triple witching ambivalence to make a mad money machine. I'll see you next Friday. Please do yourself a favor and visit IFA.com and take the risk capacity survey, benchmark your portfolio, read the scientific studies out there that prove that passive investing beats active investing. Open up an account with them. Let them help you manage your financial freedom. Thank you so very much. I'll see you next Friday. Hey, would you do me a favor and give me feedback at madmoneymachine.com? That's the email address, feedback@madmoneymachine.com. Call the voicemail line and leave me a voicemail, 206-734-4763. At Skype, Mad Money Machine is the account name. Send me a Twitter, twitter.com/madmoneymachine. Leave a comment in the show notes, madmoneymachine.com. Visit the website, give me feedback. I'll see you next Friday.